What's up, everybody? This is Sources from the Sofa. We're recording Monday night, 8:40, just not too long after the Texans-Steelers game. Texans dominating win 30-6 with some weird plays sprinkled throughout. There was lots of turnovers, missed opportunities on the Steelers' side. It was tight in the first half. We had Rodgers just looked like he was stuck in the pocket at times, getting hit. A couple forced fumbles, no one jumping on the ball. We have a fumble recovery back for a touchdown. And then I think, was it Rodgers' last throw becoming a pick six?
Yep.
So what a way to go out. The second half just looked really terrible. And then the first half, you know, both teams, rightly so, should have been disappointed with, you know, missed opportunities on both sides. So tough way to go out. Lots of conversations, whether Tomlin's going to be back or not. Same thing, is Rodgers going to be back in the NFL or not? Texans defense, one of the highest penalized defenses in the league, but they get in your face and they kind of do or die by it. And, you know, I ain't mad at it, man. Both their safeties, corners did really well. Got in Metcalf's and the receivers and Gainwell's face. Got really aggressive. It was ugly, to say the least. We'll go back and recap that. But quick reactions for this one before we reverse back all the way to the Saturday morning games.
Well, I know it hits you hard, Rome, because you're here at the top of the show saying times and everything. I don't know if you're trying to get an FM radio job, but we're recording at 8:40, 20 before top of the hour here on Sources from the Sofa.
It's funny you said that because that actually a radio station hit us up for some potential Super Bowl stuff. So I don't know.
Well, there you go. I mean, just getting ready to hit the hard network out. Make sure we get this segment going before the top of the hour right now. But yeah, The defensive struggle of this game for you, Rome. We talked about it in the preview, how long you give you credit before the Texans really went on this run, the Super Bowl caliber defense. And this game was every bit of a defensive struggle you expect from, you know, historical Steelers football. Didn't see that throughout the entire year with the Steelers defense, but definitely where the Texans were at. I didn't think it would get this out of hand at the end like it did for Rodgers and the team, but just couldn't get anything going offensively against a really good, front four and front seven of the Texans. A tough way for Rodgers to go out. You know, you hate that pick six, chasing for it, don't get the guy, you know, just kind of just the worst way probably. But, I mean, Hall of Fame career regardless, seemed like this was it.
Hall of Fame career, like him not being able to move around the pocket, I thought he might just bring out like a little more juice for this little playoff run, but him falling over his own guys, the pocket collapsing, having some weird throws, it just looked like he has nothing left of the tank. Like, that was it.
Yeah, it wasn't. And the Texans defense makes the most athletic of quarterbacks throughout this season not look as good either when you know, Will Anderson and Hunter up front, and there's just a lot of different things they're working with. And the Steelers kind of barely getting in the playoffs to a degree, kind of slumping down that stretch. We're able to, you know, we're talking that showdown with the Ravens. And, yeah, you don't know Tomlin's future, like you said. Texans dangerous here moving on. And we'll get, you know, a little more into the preview thing. I just still think C.J. Stroud, as much as he was applauded during that rookie season, didn't have the great sophomore season, pretty solid this year.
He did okay today.
He was okay, but, you know, that was my biggest thing coming out of it. And I'll say the same thing when we get into the Chargers thing. Once you get beyond that first read, Stroud doesn't know where to go with the ball a lot of times. And I don't know what the progression or check down, like, that's just watching these games, you know, this one particularly, where he's at. And that really hurt Herbert yesterday as far as how long he was taking to get rid of the ball. And Stroud, I'm seeing the same thing. So when if you're going to ask them to start scoring some points and you get against a good, you know, front four, front seven, they start bringing blitzes. Is that time for Stroud going to be there in future opponents? Because, you know, the Steelers defense, I mean, Rome, you watch this team closer than any of us on here. You know, they weren't great. This is like one of the worst Steelers defenses in a long time throughout the season and what they were able to kind of contain. I know it's playoffs. We're going another level here. But, I mean, you figure Stroud was able to get a little more.
Yeah, they had moments, but altogether in totality, 26th or 27th ranked defense in the NFL. That's not great, but they had like a lot of star players. They had a lot of injuries. At times, they looked really good. I disagree, though. They did not. I don't think they stumbled into the playoffs. They won four of their last five games, had some pretty big wins. This was not it, man. This was not it. Seven straight losses for Tomlin. Has not won since what it was like the 2015 AFC Championship, probably. I don't know. It's just, I was talking to some people yesterday. I was at my friend Will and Bonnie's house. I haven't been there in a while. We were watching the Niner game. We'll talk more about that later on, but they're like, are you guys willing to have Tomlin walk away? I'm like, dude, we're all tired of just losing in the playoffs and not even being competitive. I think this is like the fourth or fifth straight game. I think we've been like our ass kicked. I think it started actually with like the Browns kicking our ass. Was that the Johnny Manziel or was that like the?
No, it wasn't Manziel. What? That was Baker, right?
Baker.
That was, oh, a COVID. That was
Baker's,
that was a COVID
like
year.
Rookie year when like they snuck in the playoffs and we had like a really loaded team and they just worked us, man. Like ever since then, it's just been really disappointing. So
yeah, I mean,
don't know. I'm a little lost of words.
The Steelers, you know, they got to go out. They got to get a quarterback. The problem is when you're in the playoffs all the time, they just have not been able to get the quarterback ever since Roethlisberger got hurt. His elbow, remember, yeah. He missed like that season, came back, never was the same, didn't have the zip, his mobility was gone. Kenny Pickett's just been a guy, the 5 years he's been in the league, he's been running for his life as well. I mean, there's a guy in Green Bay named Malik Willis, which I think would be perfect for the Steelers for what they need, a guy that can move around, throw the ball deep. They got to get some more playmakers. I mean, I like their tight end room, I like DK. You know, maybe get another wide receiver, slot wide receiver, build upon that. Their O-line's not bad. They didn't look good against the Texans, but the Texans make a lot of O-lines look bad, so that's nothing to be ashamed about. I mean, Rodgers, if you mentioned if Rodgers could have moved a little bit, he could have avoided probably two or three of those sacks and a couple of those fumbles. But this is what Houston gets. They're mean. They're physical. They're tough. They don't care. They challenge you at every level of the field. They're deep at every level of the field. I mean, their front four is good. Their linebackers are good. Their secondary is really good. They basically play a 4-2-5. They play the same defense. They dare you to run because they can stop you with their front four. They dare you to throw because their guys can cover and they can get after the quarterback by just bringing four. I don't think the Texans blitz, but maybe a handful of times in this game.
It was disguised blitz.
And, yeah. The Steelers just never could capitalize on it. I mean, it was a game that I thought was going to happen, which, you know, the Texans. Going back to what Jason said, I mean, C.J. Stroud did not have a good game. I thought, you know, a lot of the mistakes were just not paying attention to the ball getting snapped to him, kind of trying to see where the pressures were coming because the Steelers were showing a lot of, you know, 6-7-man fronts, seeing who was going to blitz, who was going to drop back. Kind of threw him off his game. But I thought in the second half, at least late third, fourth quarter, he made some big third down throws to get to extend drives that eventually, you know, they got a field goal and then they got the two touchdowns. But Steelers up and down all year. I mean, their defense, we saw them, what, you know, 5-6 weeks ago, Buffalo rushed for over 200 yards. We thought they were done. And then, like, the last 4 weeks, they've had the number one rush defense in the league, giving up less than 75. It's amazing that they stopped Detroit to only 15 yards rushing, given how good of a running team they were. But Houston was able to run the ball down their throat consistently. And then
they got big chunks. It was a big chunks at
yeah,
a time.
Yeah, and then Kirk had a huge game. Nico Collins goes out in the third quarter of a concussion. We'll have to see what his availability is for this upcoming weekend game against the Patriots. But, I mean, the Texans is the reason why I took him once these playoffs started to get to the Super Bowl. I believe in this defense. I think so. I just can't go against my team. I like C.J. Stroud. I mean, he throws the ball easy. I mean, everything in the pocket for him is easy. It's just sometimes he's a bit off. And he was off today, but I'm still a big believer in what he can do, and I'm a big believer in what the Texans can do going forward as their 3-point dog already against the Patriots. So I would already jump on the Texans +3 because I think that line will go down.
I was pretty pumped up before this game started. I was like feeling the vibes, like I loved like the intro by ESPN. But then once most of the guys picked the Steelers, I'm like, I'm not feeling good anymore. Ryan Clark, Stephen A. Aaron's doppelganger, you know, it's just, I can't remember his name.
Hasselbeck?
Nah, but it doesn't really matter.
No.
all right. Unless you guys have any more comments about this game, I really don't know what else to say. I think they did, nothing really changed with the projected schedule. It's just the times. I didn't get a chance to take a look at it. So Texans move on to play who?
Texans will play the Patriots. That'll be the Sunday early game, noon Eastern or noon Pacific.
Noon standard time, yeah, our time.
Yeah, so it'll be noon our time. And then Bears-Rams will be the Sunday nightish game on NBC.
Yeah, was it a 3:30 kickoff or something? Four?
Yeah, yeah, sucks, dude. I really wish they put the Niners on Sunday instead. A lot of gripes about the way the playoff schedule is. It's really not fair. It's really stupid. But all right, well, let's go back then. Let's go back to Saturday, because that's where it all started. Rams and Panthers. Such a good game. Every game was great until last night's game, Chargers-Pats. It was ugly. It was unbearable. Drake May, look, that was like his worst game of the year. And granted, this is only the second team that they play with a winning record, I think, all year round, besides the Bills. So, you know, you kind of expect a little adjustment there. But Pats took care of business. But going back, though, besides that, though, this was like shaping up to be like one of the best wild card weekends in a long time. Panthers showed up. They had a chance to win it going down the field as time was expiring, just didn't have enough in the tank. But man, they had it there. They could have taken away. Rams really lucky to escape that. And you know, they just don't look that good to me right now. And then we'll talk about the next game afterwards. Packers and the Bears. Packers kicking themselves in their own ass and losing that fucking game.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, Rome. Sometimes lucky to be than good.
Yeah, I know. And oh my God, that game really pissed me off, dude. We'll go back to it, but let's start with the Rams Panthers. I had no qualms of like who would win. I was kind of quietly rooting for the Panthers though, for an upset, and they got hella close. It was not a good game. The Panthers looked, some plays it looked great, some plays it looked ugly. It was basically like what you saw, Aaron, that one day. And you're like, how are you rooting for this team?
I've been telling you, I'm not the only one that's seen this stuff. So, I mean, the film does not lie. That's all I will say. The film does not lie.
Even the broadcasters were saying like, wait, like one drive they're good, one drive they're bad. Like, pick a fucking side.
The good thing for Saturday, we'll touch on it. One of Jason's two teams, Rome, as you mentioned before, these playoffs did advance. So that's a good thing. They didn't get eliminated on Saturday.
Two Jason's two teams. Yeah. So thoughts on that game first.
To start the game, you know, Rams are up 14-0 to start that game. And you figure it's going to be a blowout. They're marching down the field. Panthers couldn't do anything offensively that first quarter. I was like, okay, this is going to be the blowout. Potentially thought it was. The Rams kind of learned the lesson from the first matchup. You know, they're a 10-point favorite on the
road. Were they up 14?
They're up 14-0 to start that game. Okay. And so, like, I was initial because I'm pretty sure in the picks I picked Rams to cover that 10, and Aaron, you know, Aaron had the Panthers to cover on that, and I'm like, okay, it's going to be runaway, but you know, it didn't turn that way. Just the Rams, all of us, because Puka Nacua was killing the Panthers in the first two drives. It was getting uncomfortable at a certain point. It's like, they can't do anything to stop this guy. And then I don't know what turned around there in that second quarter, because all of a sudden you were going and a half at 17-14. And okay, this is way tighter than we're thinking it should be. And you're right. It was every other drive, or what it would have been. They couldn't get the run game going at all. Like Rico Dowdle, you know, 5 carries for 9 yards, non-existent. Chuba Hubbard basically reclaimed the starting job here down the stretch, but he couldn't get anything going. And so Bryce Young, 50%, a little above 50% completion, but finding the right guys at the right time. Like Jalen Coker had himself a game, 134 yards, and that was really kind of that second half or second quarter to second half coming alive. Yeah, and it was kind of just these things. I mean, are the Rams going to let this thing slip away? Because they're obviously the more talented team offensively. You know, I know, you know, talking to some people during the game, like the passing was working and they kept going back to trying to get, you know, Kyren Williams and Blake Corum some carries to be able to effectively invest in the running game for the play action to go. But it just felt like the run game was never taken off for them either. But then they just lost the rhythm in the passing game on some of that. And then the Stafford kind of mistakes that you didn't see from the MVP there. And that was keeping the Panthers in the game and then potentially winning it. So the Rams, Aaron, Rome, you said you're not believing them. I mean, are they still the betting favorite to win the Super Bowl? I don't know if they are, like, but this is a team where like they almost played down to an inferior like opponent at this point. Like they should be blowing out the Panthers, both of these meetings. And it just looks like, hey, all of a sudden they just lose it mid game and not really understand why.
Rams are an interesting team. I mean, we went into this game, like you mentioned, Rome, talking about, hey, Carolina, they don't belong, whatnot. But they just beaten the Rams, 6 weeks ago. So anytime you beat a team and they're coming back to your house again, you're going to be confident. So I was really confident in Carolina pinning up a good game. You know, I said they have a shot at upsetting the Rams. I mean, the Rams defensively these last 6 weeks have been in the bottom. They're giving up a ton of yards, ton of points. And Bryce Young, you know, when the games are on the line in the big games, he's actually played pretty well. And against, you know, some mediocre teams, he's not. And going back, I mean, I think when the Rams got up to such a big lead, you know, maybe Stafford got hurt or not, whatever, this throwing finger on his index hand, throwing the ball, when he got banged up a little bit. I guess x-rays came back negative. But I thought where the Rams messed up, and we'll touch on it, a lot of coaches just doing stupid decisions going for it on fourth down instead of taking easy points. I mean, McVay could have went up 20-7. Goes for it on fourth and three. No reason. They get stopped. Carolina goes down and gets a touchdown and make it 17-14 at the half. Completely swung the momentum. There was another game. We'll get into that on Sunday where kind of the same happened. Swung the momentum.
Yep.
But, you know, sometimes in the playoffs, man, early game, just take points. You got momentum. Your defense is controlling it. Instead, now you give another team life. Carolina's crowd was fired up the whole time. The Rams could never really build upon that 14-0 lead. Carolina kept it close. And, you know, look at Bryce Young made some big time throws down there in the red zone, goal line to goal, kept him in the game. Carolina just didn't have enough time. The Rams, you know, they missed some big plays too. Davante Adams missed some passes. You know, Puka Nacua, as Jason said, was kicking ass. I mean, he dropped a touchdown, I think, late in the first half that would have at least set him up for points, where it hit him basically in the hands and helmet, face mask there. Rams are a dangerous team because, you know, look, they can score of anybody defensively. They, you know, they can get after you. They can get turnovers and whatnot. But it's an interesting matchup they got coming up here with the Bears. And it's going to be a good game because you got two teams right now that are scoring points at a high rate. And defensively, both teams are giving up points at a high rate. It could be another shootout at Soldier Field. We'll have to see what the weather looks like, though.
Well, this game kind of set the tone, too, because they had a couple lead changes in the fourth quarter. I think the Panthers up at least once or twice. And if I'm not mistaken, Bryce Young got them ahead with like 2 minutes to go. But that's way too much time for this Rams offense. And then the Rams scored, I think, was like 30-something seconds left. And then I didn't like the play calling on the last drive for the Panthers. I think the play calling was really sketchy in the second half of the season for this Panthers team because they had two good running backs and they kind of went away with that. And same thing in this game, too. So it was exciting, though. It set the tone for the whole weekend. After this game, though, I'm like, oh, shit, this is going to be fun. So we got that in the books. We go on to Saturday night. Epic night. My daughter was pumped up watching the game. She picked the Packers herself. I didn't tell her about anything.
Well, she was sending Jason direct messages. So that's what I heard on the text messages.
Well, she asked, what are the guys going for on the podcast? Like, well, Aaron's team is the Packers. They're called the Cheeseheads. And she's like, what's their mascot? I'm like, I don't know. It's fucking cheese, dude. I don't know. They don't have a mascot. And she's like, and then the other one's the Bears, right? I'm like, yeah, that's Jason's team. And she's like, oh, man, they're not doing good. I was like, you want to send a message? So that's what she sent you, the message. And then at the end of the game, she's like, Jason's team won. I'm like, yeah. So we had a good time. But what a fucking game, though, because that Packers-Bears team, the Pack looked like they dominated three quarters going to the beginning half of the fourth quarter. LaFleur lights out, great play calling, and then they just let off the fucking gas. It was unbelievable. And this Bears team, man, I don't know what that is. maybe it is the Pope coming from Chicago. Maybe it is, because they've now have, what, 7 come from behind victories this year, most in Bears franchise history, I believe. And that pass, I think it was Caleb Williams rolling left,
ridiculous,
just jumping off his back foot across.
Michael
across
Jordan
the body,
fallaway jump shot in game 6 of a finals type shot.
To Roma
shot,
Dunze,
man.
In between three defenders, was it 2 or 3 defenders? It didn't really matter. It was just such a beautiful throw and catch, like on the money. And that's what did it, because they had no business winning that game. And that's like one of the best throws I've seen in the playoffs in a long time. And I just don't know what to think of Caleb Williams still, because like he's been pulling some things out of his ass late in the game all year long, and there's something there. There's something there, but, you know, Bears move on. And what's up with the beef with LaFleur and Johnson anyways? Like, Johnson's, like, saying F the Packers, you know, post-game, does, like, a shitty handshake. Like, I still don't know what's happening there.
I don't think there is really any, like, beef per se. I think this is all just Ben Johnson. And he said it in his press conference today. Like, this is a rivalry. And this is a rivalry game, and we don't have to, you know, be all lovey-dovey with everybody out of it. No pun intended. You know, this is the oldest rivalry in professional football.
I just got that.
You know,
fine.
Yeah, I know. But you know, it's the oldest rivalry in professional football, and there was a time, and you know, you think of like NBA rivalries of our youth and different things like the teams. I mean, there's a great documentary. I'm scrolling to another sport, but you think of the Rome, you're a Red Wings fan, the Red Wings Avalanche from like the 90s. Like, these guys were literally trying to kill each other on the ice when it came to that rivalry and how historic, you know, some of those matchups in the playoffs turned to be. And, you know, the Bears have been, you know, the punching bag to the Packers for, you know, the past decade plus. Like, there was a stat going on that Jay Cutler, Mitch Trubisky, and Justin Fields, all of them had a combined 3 wins against the Packers during however many years that is to those 3 starting quarterbacks. Caleb already has 3 wins against the Packers in 2 years. And so now you're getting into, hey, 2 young head coaches that I presume LaFleur is still going to have a job in this. We'll get into that more later. But 2 young head coaches, good offensive minds, you know, 2 great teams, 2 historic organizations, 2 good quarterbacks. I mean, Love was fantastic. 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. You know, he was great.
Great.
In the game. So, you know, there's some hostility, and I think Ben Johnson's taking the opportunity. Like, there's one thing about Chicago, and it's this rivalry with Green Bay. And it's like, hey, you know, F these guys. I don't like them, and they shouldn't like us, and this is what's going to be. And there's some talking back and forth. And I think it's a level of stakes that was in that game that hadn't been seen in forever. You had Al Michaels talking, that's the loudest he ever heard or felt that stadium towards the end. And there's a buzz and energy around this team just to get up. And yeah, I don't know if there's any actual personal beef. Allegedly, these guys don't really even know each other. But, you know, Ben Johnson's that kind of psycho, man. He's got something in his mind that just, it doesn't matter. I'm going to make this into something, because I'm not supposed to like these guys.
Yeah, it was weird. One thing about the Packers, man, I Love had a great game, but I didn't like how there was a few opportunities to kind of run the clock a little bit, get the run game going on the second half, and it just left too much time and that door open for the Bears to come back. 25 points in the fourth quarter, man. 25 fucking points in the fourth quarter. That's ridiculous.
It was crazy. I at halftime, I
how'd
not...
you feel, Jason?
Oh, I thought it was over. I'm not going to lie. I've been a Bears fan for 40 years, man. I was like, we lose that game 10 times out of 10. It's a blowout. It's over in half. You know, I'm at a pretty much a Bears bar watching this game with a bunch of my friends. I got a couple of Packer friends. I got a friend who's a Rams fan who already won. And he asked me at halftime, Rome, about the text with your daughter at that time, just asking me, like, when can I start talking mess to you right now? Because they knew just the anger and everything just draining in my face. Yeah. In that moment. And I thought it was over. I didn't see it. As much as Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson and this Bears team have taught me throughout this entire season, is like, we will make it a game in the fourth quarter and have that ability to come back. It was just like, man, I didn't have faith that the defense was going to stop enough. And then at the same time, it's like, man, we're going for it on fourth down on our own 32-yard line. And don't convert it, because, like, you felt at that moment Ben Johnson didn't think that the Bears defense was going to be able to stop Jordan Love on this. So, man, it wasn't feeling good in the halftime. I mean, even in the third quarter, you know, they got a field goal. Okay, it's a two-possession game now. That they had the stops, but then you get the interception, which is basically kind of like a punt. We didn't get anything out of that. And then you're down two possessions going in the fourth quarter. You get another field goal. Okay, we're feeling something. They punt again. The Bears score the touchdown. I would say when it was 21-16, I'm like, all right, man. Like at that moment, I was like, I felt there was something there. We made the stop.
Agree.
We got the touchdown. And then the Packers come right down and score. And I think it's was it Matthew Golden's first
touchdown? Golden had a great game.
It was.
He's going to be really good.
I mean, that was his kind of coming out game. That was his best game as a pro, first touchdown. And I'm like, man, this ain't it. And then the Bears go 10 plays, 76 yards, and just answer right back, get the two-point conversion. It was just things were just working, and that shouldn't. And that fourth down play, you said, I mean, it's just – it's going to live in Caleb Williams' lore and Bears' lore. The game was over if he doesn't convert that. And the level of difficulty in that throw, like, I don't know how many guys in the league can make that throw, but it's maybe two or three.
Not many. It was a few things. Once Love and Golden got that touch in the fourth quarter, I'm like, all right, cool. 11 points. This thing's comfortable. 6 minutes to go. Like, no way Bears score that fast. They did within a couple minutes. And I'm like, oh, shit. They got that two-point conversion. The kicking, though, man, with the Packers. It was that, 52-yarder to end the second quarter. He makes it, but there's a timeout called. He misses the second attempt, shanks it left.
Yep.
And then he had another missed field goal in the fourth quarter. I think it was after that Williams touchdown, right? And
yeah,
it was like another 40-yarder. These are all kicks that he makes in the regular season, and he misses that extra point on that Love touchdown as well. It could have been 28-16, right? Yeah, 7 points gone. Really, I don't really count the 50-yarder because, you know, that's like a 50-50 shot, but 4 points gone right there. I heard a lot of Packers fans pissed off at McManus on X and everywhere else.
I believe it. I last time the Bears were as relevant, or I was, you know, as close to this excited, was, you know, the Trubisky Matt Nagy double game. And as a Bears fan that season, I said all season it was gonna, like, the season's gonna end because of Cody Parkey, and it did. And so I could probably feel for Packers fans that is because Aaron, I don't know, you're the resident Packers fan of the show. I was hearing throughout this game that Packers fans were iffy about McManus the entire year. And so I think they had those doubts creeping, you know, throughout this game that he's going to cost us this game. Because some of those kicks were like just crazy taking off. And I don't know if it's the wind and he just doesn't play it. I mean, I don't love Cairo Santos, the Bears kicker, because he's got really nothing beyond like 45 yards. But he knows how to play the wind, man. He's like the great putter. He knows the line. He's not going to be the bomber, but he's not going to play the wind to get in there. And McManus, it just wasn't there. And yeah, I think that was obviously a huge factor in the game when you're taking, 7 points off the board between the extra point and two missed field goals.
Yeah, I mean, he made that field goal. Well, they called timeout to end the half, right? On that 51-yard field goal that he made, timeout right before. He comes down and misses. I mean, 51, when, you know, windy conditions, shoulder field's tough. The extra point, no excuse. The 44-yard field goal, no excuse. I think the big thing for me when I look at why the Packers lost this game, I'm going to put this loss on Matt LaFleur. Because the second half offense, play calling,
right,
early sucked. Like Romy mentioned, they did not have they took the foot off the gas pedal. No sense of urgency, lackadaisical, three and out, three and out, three and out. And the defense kept holding these guys. I mean, they went into the fourth quarter, what was it, 21-6? I think, 10 minutes ago in the fourth quarter, it was a 21-9 game.
Yep.
And, I mean, Jordan Love, I mean, I think there was a play there mid-third quarter, late third quarter. I think it was about at midfield, third and two. I think Jordan Love could have easily ran for first down. Instead, he throws the ball like 5 feet over Golden's head.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what are we doing right now? I mean, you got to punt in that situation. No reason in going for it. I mean, I don't know if you guys touched on it. I mean, look at Ben Johnson called a great game in the second half, but he did a terrible job managing that game. I mean, ridiculousness going for it on fourth down as many times as he did. I mean, he's lucky at the end of the game that he can say fuck the Packers, because the team in Chicago would have been saying fucking punt it on fourth down a la Dan Campbell. So maybe something's in the water there in Detroit, because he brought a lot of that juice with him over biting kneecaps, because that's what he seems like he's been doing in the locker room.
Yeah,
right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they were fortunate. I mean, Caleb Williams built them out. Rome, if you talked about that fall away pass to Rome, I mean, that was it was a great play.
Dude, it was amazing.
I mean, watching that play, I just looked at myself and I just laughed. I just laughed. It was just like, you got to give it up to him. That's a great play.
It got my daughter to throw her Barbies down. Like, Dad, do you see that catch? Like, that's how good it was.
And if, and you go back and you look at that game in the fourth quarter, you go like, man, only if the what are the Packers missing? Oh, right, that's Micah Parsons, right? That's why you got him for games like this when you have a double digit fourth quarter lead to get after the quarterback so you can make Caleb, you know, throw passes like that, or maybe somebody doesn't even get that pass over you, right? Maybe you get a sack, maybe you get him off another step or two over so that ball goes out of bounds. I know for the Packers, I think for the Packers, you guys have been asking where's been Golden all year, Matthew Golden. Well, he showed up.
He,
I think
he
they
great.
Found something.
He looked great.
They found something, and maybe that's something for them to build on. They'll
100%.
Get Tucker Kraft back next year. Green Bay, you know, I think Matt LaFleur is going to be back. I mean, I think there's already talked about, you know, contract extension. It's going to get done. It'd be stupid to get rid of him. He'd be the number one coach on the market right away.
The wording was kind of weird, though. Like, they're going to try to give an extension.
I mean, it's one year left. I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's, you know, it's lame duck status. You don't go into the final year without the extension. And then I saw Schefter on Sunday, you know, tweeting out that Harbaugh's agents, the son of the former Packers president, and Harbaugh's got a home in the Upper Peninsula, and like all, you know, just kind of rumor and innuendo. It wasn't really like straight reporting from Schefter, but like
Schefter has not done any reporting this year.
I don't know. I mean, that was where I think the wins.
I don't think he's done any reporting since he's gotten to ESPN after he left NFL Network. Yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's just all rumor mails from him now.
Yeah, I mean, just definitely some agents working the phone with that potentially, but. Yeah, I agree with Aaron as much as Packers go fire LaFleur because I think he's a great offensive coach. That'd be a plus for the Bears. But if they're smart, there's things to work on because Aaron's right for Ben Johnson. Man, he would have been getting killed on some of these. He was 2 for 6 on fourth down. The one Aaron we already talked about.
Was it 4th and 6 when he went forward on his own 32?
That was just wild. Yeah,
I was like, I mean, that, what are you doing?
That was my mindset where I was like, you know, as the Bears fans right now are like, hey, we got this fourth quarter magic, which we do. But that was the call to me going into halftime was like, Ben knows the defense is cooked. Like, he just knows he has to go for it. If this is what he's saying on our own 32, that we can't get it in three downs on a first down and we just have no hope for the defense to stop him. So, but is that, you know, was that sending the message to the defense? Like, man, y'all better step it up here in the second half, because they did. A little help probably from the Packers offense if you're going to get the Packers fan in that. But I mean, all in all, I mean, the whirlwind of emotions just wild in that game for where it was at, and the inevitable for the Bears. You know, Romy talked about just what Caleb Williams is. He throws for 363 yards, still like 50% completion. But he's playing the quarterback position maybe a different way than we're not used to, because for a decade plus now, it's about like completion percentage. But like, this guy hits
He's kind of a throwback.
He hits the big play, but then also doesn't turn the ball over. I know he had two interceptions in this game. One of them basically was a fourth down punt that the Packers guy, I don't even know why he caught. And the other one was a clear miscommunication from Luther Burden not running the post and keeping it into a fade. So it was the most interceptions Caleb's thrown since like week 2 or 3 of being a starter last year. So he hits the big play, but hasn't made the big, big mistakes throughout the season. And so, yeah, right. It's a throwback, but it's a throwback that doesn't get you kind of the turnovers that you generally get. For the Bears, though, going into next week, and we'll probably talk about it more, I don't think the Rams are a team you can trifle with getting behind. Like, the offense does need to show up in a first half at some point, you know, probably like it did during that Niners game. Cause I don't know about coming back that much on a Rams team that's got a ton more talent offensively. And, you know, for all potential purposes, probably definitely a better coach than Sean McVay.
Yeah, McVay's the best coach, I think, in the NFL.
What?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing the Rams do have a problem with, too.
I don't know if he.
Yes.
He's got that Super Bowl over Ben Johnson, but I'll live or die with Ben right now.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I would live or die for 4th and 6 on my own 32 when the game is. I get your defense is playing bad, but you don't give another offense that's rolling a short field like that when your defense is playing that bad. You got to punt him back down inside the 20, 25-yard line and make him at least drive the length of the field. look at the Rams special teams. Their kicking game is terrible. Their special teams have been bad all year. Remember, they just fired their special teams coordinator like 2-3 weeks ago, and they've not gotten much better. So their kicker's not great coming into that game. It's going to be tough for them. Rams are going to need to get touchdowns. The Bears, I mean, defensively, we touched on, look, I think Green Bay let them off the hook. I mean, they were blitzing a ton there, man-to-man coverage. I think Green Bay could have taken advantage of it. If they do that with Puka, Davante Adams, I believe the Rams will. But again, we'll see what the weather looks like.
It's going to be, I believe, around 4 degrees. It's going to feel like a -8 factor. That's what they said so far.
Caleb Williams, I think Bears fans, we'll see if he ever gets it cleaned up. I think Caleb Williams makes a spectacular play, but he still misses a real easy throw sometimes. And I just got a feeling there's going to be a time in this playoff where he makes the play like he did against Green Bay, falling backwards, and where he misses a wide open touchdown that would win a game that's going to end up costing
you
the game.
You know who was kind of like that? Cam Newton. He was reminding me a lot of Cam Newton.
I can see that.
Yeah. Any last comments from this game? We'll talk a little bit about the Rams game, though, but I think that's going to be really good. Rams going to a really cold Chicago Bears stadium. I'm not going to use the Bears hibernating analogy anymore for this season.
They're definitely not hibernating right now. That game was special. This season for the Bears has been special with the fourth quarter comebacks. The Green Bay trilogy, though, I mean, I obviously have, as a Bears fan, have the upper hand in the 2-3, but those are three of the more entertaining games you'll probably ever have with the way those have ended. Crazy style of those three games. The Bears never had an offensive snap where they were in the lead in any of those three games this year.
No, they were.
Not only that, they were dominating the first half of all three of those games. But they scored a grand total of 6 points in those first three games, first half combined.
Yep.
So, Aaron, you made an interesting comment because you used to say LaFleur was the top three coach of the NFL. How do you feel about him now?
I'm still big on Matt LaFleur. I mean, I would be happy if their defensive coordinator got a head coaching job. Maybe get him out of there. I think he lost all opportunity of getting that. I don't know why he was even being brought up for getting head coaching jobs. But like, I think one thing I'll say about Matt LaFleur, what I've noticed a lot of his times with his teams, is they don't have that killer instinct. Like, they just don't have that drive to pit teams away when it seems like it should be there. Like, they should have beaten the Bears by double digits easily in this game. Should have been, it was what, 21-3 at the half. They should have honestly won like 31-20, something like that. I think that's what I kind of capped that game to be out to begin with. No reason they should have lost this game. I mean, their defense gave up, what, 9 points for three quarters. I mean, Caleb Williams, like we said, he made some great plays. But, I mean, Ben Johnson basically delivered that game on a silver platter, going for it on fourth down multiple times. They could have kicked field goals. They got how many turnovers on downs do they have on the fourth down? Would you say they were 2-for-6, Jason?
Yep. Yeah,
two. Plus, Caleb had 2 picks. Yeah, I mean, it's a game when you look at it. Like, you win the turnover battle. You won the third down battle. You won the fourth down battle. Kicking game hurt him, obviously. But I think Matt LaFleur's got to keep the aggression and keep attacking, right? What's the old motto? Like, hey, I'm up 40-0. I want to be up 50-0. I feel like he lacks that. And I think that's where the Bears kind of were like, hey, you know what? We don't care if we're down 20. We're going to keep fighting. We don't care if we're up 30. We're going to beat you by 60. I think that's what his teams need to kind of adjust and get that attitude going forward.
Well, funny thing, LaFleur was on that Atlanta team that gave up that Super Bowl to the Pats. Same thing with Shanahan. They have something in common. Maybe it's that whole Atlanta tree, but, you know, what do I know? I do want to recap the Chargers-Pats game before we talk about the other two games, because the Pats-Chargers was just bad. I really don't have much to say besides Herbert. Not a great game, but the guy is big. He had no protection. He was running all night. Pats wasn't a great game, but the defense stepped in when they had to. Drake May, his worst game, I think, all season long. Maybe not all season long, because he kind of came into his own this year, but he really came through with some really well-timed runs. That was really beneficial. 16-3, though, such a low-scoring game. Thoughts on that real quick?
Yeah, Herbert obviously was getting beat up like no other. The offensive line's been a question the entire year, but I mentioned it a little bit at the beginning, and I saw the stats out there for on, I think Pro Football Focus had it for how long it was taking him to throw, like average, like 3.43 seconds, I think was the average that he had. And so holding the ball too long, my cousin's a big Patriots fan, lives in Boston. I was texting with him throughout the game and he was commenting just the Patriots, you know, really, he was proud of the secondary. And I think that was like the, really the key of the game. When you think you got Keenan, McConkey, you know, Johnston, like there's some weapons there, but I guess no separation or whatever Herbert was looking at, whether the first throw was off and going through the progression, like we talked through with Stroud. I mean, knowing the offensive line isn't there, what was going to be that to get some quick passes and get that going? It just didn't seem like the Chargers had any rhythm offensively. And it's just Herbert trying to just survive out there holding the ball. And man, he was taking some shots.
He got beat up. Even Drake May got beat up. I mean, give the Chargers defense credit for even keeping this a game.
Dude, 16 points, that's really great.
I mean, I know this was one of our bigger plays on the under in this game, 46. It was a large, large play for us here. We talked about that. But, I mean, Chargers, Jason touched on it going in the preview of that game, that offensive line. He asked, hey, how do they score points? I mean, the Chargers the last three games scored a grand total of 22 points against three teams that are now three of the four finalists in the AFC. So they're not scoring points. I mean, Greg Roman likely going to be dismissed as offensive coordinator. Be interesting to see if Harbaugh goes outside his kind of coaching tree. Brian Daboll, are you interested? Come on down. The Chargers could use you.
Huh.
But Chargers, they should get their offensive lineman back next year. I think they're going to draft an interior offensive lineman as well, either a guard or center to kind of beef that up. Defensively, we'll see what happens with Jesse Minter, whether or not he gets a head coaching gig. I think he should. He might not get one this cycle, but he's one of the better minds out there. Drake May is a really good quarterback, and they did a really good job against him. And if you're the Chargers, Jason, what do you say, 3.4 seconds to throw the ball? I mean, the NFL average is like, 2.5 yep. typically. So, I mean, that's a long time.
Well, he was always on the run. I think he led the team in rushing as well.
Yeah, I mean, once you start getting hit, you know, you start, you know, whether or not he wasn't going through his progression. I mean, once you start getting hit, you're immediately look to run and get out of the pocket, right? It's just a common thing. Like, I'm not going to sit here and get hit all the time. I mean, basically, I think the Patriots second half, it looked like they were blitzing over 50% of the time, and they were getting through. I mean, Herbert, I mean, what do you have, two or three fumbles? I think they recovered a couple of them, the Chargers, but it was an ugly game for him. It was an ugly game for that offensive line. The skill guys, they have some good guys in Gadsden, Allen, McConkey, Johnson, Harris. They got players there. You know, the rookie Hampton was out with the injury, the ankle. He only played, one or two snaps. But if you're the Chargers, look, I mean, you got to get that offensive line fixed. You know, you got two stud tackles that both got hurt. They weren't really, you know, good on the perimeter with their tackles. Defensively, you know, they're one of the cheaper defenses in the league. So that unit's still pretty good, depending on what happens with Jesse Minter, whether or not he gets a head coaching gig.
Yeah.
But the Harbaugh process, I mean, for me, and if you're a Chargers fan, you never expected to win in the first couple years. If you look at what Harbaugh does, I mean, I know the Niners got to the Super Bowl pretty quick, but if you look at his other coaching destinations, they win, but they don't necessarily get to like championship level till year four, five, and six. So I think the Chargers still have some work to do. But, I mean, back-to-back playoffs for them, the Chargers would take it, but they've not showed out well in the playoffs.
All right, so let's go to the other games on Sunday, which started off with the Bills and Jags. Phenomenal game on this one. Jags had a chance to come back for a game-winning drive themselves. Ball got tipped. Interception. Sealed the deal. Josh Allen, phenomenal game all around. Two rushing touchdowns. Cook got some yards as well. Who's our guy, man? Actually came in. You've been vouching for him. Keon Coleman got some big plays in this game. I think maybe just one play, actually. But it was a big play down the right side for a big chunk. It was such a good game, though. A slugfest. I know Romo was really big on the Jags, was really heavily favoring them to potentially win a Super Bowl this year. You guys have been more on that line. I don't think so, but really good year from Lee and Colm and team. I'm still not sold on their quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, but he's had a great year. It was just a great year all around, and I don't know, man. Bills, the old bull, came through.
Yeah, that was one of the – pretty sure I said in the prediction, you know, we were high on Liam Cohen, questionable at the Bills defense, but this was going to be one of those games to me. I was not going to be shocked if Josh Allen just did everything he could to wheel him through. I don't know how many times he went to the blue medical tent in that game. It felt like after the drive was over, it was just like, twice. He just went straight to the
two,
blue medical
tent. Yeah.
I was like, I didn't.
I mean, yeah.
I was like, did they even clear him? Like, I don't even know what's going on. Like, the Jacksonville defense was really taking it, you know, to him at a certain point. You know, James Cook, you know, they were really getting him moving or trying to get him carries, but, you know, he was only averaging like 3 yards a carry, you know, didn't get a ton out of it. But the game was
they
a struggle.
Stuffing the holes really quick.
It was, and the game was just kind of a struggle back and forth. It was a really good game, Rome, as you talked about it. We had some great ones really all up until that Sunday night game, and this is one of them. You know, there's something there with Jacksonville. Like, man, I think it sucks for them because, you know, 13-4 this year, considering where they were a year ago. Trevor Lawrence really made those leaps, but in this game, obviously the two interceptions, you know, were pretty devastating to, you know, the final outcome. You know, didn't get ETN, you know, super involved. He had some pretty good runs. Yeah, I think he ripped off a big one. So did Tootin. But, you know, overall, I just, you know, the Bills defense, I'll be honest, surprised me in this game. Like, they really came to play and locked down some things. And Josh Allen, you're right, Rome, the veteran kind of came through. And if this is going to be his moment, I know there's critics out here, but he's got the playoff field to himself for his two contemporaries that have been kind of quote unquote in the way. Lamar and Patrick are not in the playoff. And so is this the moment he can rise through? It's going to be the toughest possible route. Just going to go on the road and go on the road and go on the road. But, you know, I think it's going to be all on his shoulders right now of what this like playoff season will be for the Bills.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about Josh Allen was going to have to put on the cape and be Superman. Right. And he was in the fourth quarter. I mean, Jason, you talked about him going to the 10. I mean, talking about quarterbacks that got beat up. I mean, Josh Allen was getting beat up out there. I mean, Jacksonville was laying the lumber, dude. I mean, Buffalo got 79 yards rushing in this game. I think I heard an interesting stat. Jacksonville hadn't even let one rusher all year get more than 75 yards.
Really?
I mean, this defense is mean. They're brutal too. I mean, Jacksonville's a really good team.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, that's why the line reversed. I mean, it was a 3-point swing to Jacksonville being favored by 1.5, 2 points. I think Buffalo getting Jacksonville out of the field did the AFC a favor because I think Jacksonville is a really, really good football team. They remind me a lot of that 14-2 Chargers team that never went to the Super Bowl. This is a good football team with a good defense that can get after you and do a lot of things. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, but we touched on McVay. Liam Cohen had a chance to go up 10-3 in that game. They went for it. They get stopped. Buffalo goes down and goes up 10-7 at the half. That's a 10-point swing. Kind of really screwed Jacksonville there. Could have went up 10-3. I think they could have controlled the game and at least kept the lead, kept the pressure on Buffalo. But Josh Allen, I mean, he made a throw in the fourth quarter, I think, where all-out blitz came.
It was so good.
And it was like a 40-yard like dime to Brandon Cooks. And like the corner basically cheated on the underneath route because he's like, no way this guy can get a 40 yards of this pressure. I mean, it was just a crazy, insane throw where he gets it before the safety gets there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just looking at it and you're like, man, there's only a handful of guys in this league that make that play. And Josh Allen's one of them. And that's why they won the game.
Yeah. Crazy. No, you wouldn't, if you didn't see the Caleb Williams throw, you would have thought this one the next day was like an insane throw.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I think it overshadows it. Cause I haven't seen the replays of that on like the social medias as much as the Caleb throw, but this one was really good too.
It was really awesome. I'm just drawing a blank though. Cause it was pretty tight. Josh Allen and their tush-push. They had like a big gain, I think, at the end that brought him down to the one.
It was a tush-push that almost went like 15 yards for a touchdown.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I'm like, what the hell? And then at that point, Jacksonville just let him score. And
yeah, they had to, right?
It was a great game.
They had what, no timeouts?
Yeah, I think it was like about a minute left. So they really had no choice. A lot of people were actually making fun of that decision, saying that they should have kneeled it, but I've seen too many games where teams play it safe. They run out the clock and then they don't score. Like, you just, I'm in favor of at least scoring as soon as possible, but to each their own.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a tie game, then yeah, you just take a knee, kick a field goal, you win it. But if you're down, you got to go up as soon as you can. Cause if you get a holding penalty, a false start, and now it's all of a sudden third and goal from the 5 or 6 of 20 seconds. you know, it becomes interesting. So, yeah, I agree. Just take the touchdown. Jacksonville should give up the touchdown there. We'll see. I mean, Jacksonville, you know, with the emergence of what's the guy, Washington there.
And Parker then they Washington. Got
Jacoby Myers. Yeah. I think you're going to see, like, Travis Hunter probably transition more time, more full time to defense now that they really look like they got their three wide receiver sets already. So I don't know, you know, we'll see what he's coming back off the ACL. They're using him a lot within the offense. But now that you got Washington, Jacoby Myers, and Brian Thomas Jr., those are kind of your main three guys with Strange and ETN. I think Hunter's probably going to play majority of his snaps going forward, at least next year on defense, which will improve already a really good defense, a unit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad at that. I think the way they should be treating that to a degree is, to your point, Aaron, putting him on defense and then just figuring out a package with a play or two where you work them into offense, whether it's a decoy or, you know, there actually is some things to run to it where it's small. I did doing both like full time definitely is not going to work. And if you got what you need on offense, which is a rhythm, I think you keep it there. I guess the only counter to that, like, Brian Thomas Jr. had a pretty disappointing second year right now. Like, is he still the feature guy you want him to be as a number one, or are they going to relook at Travis Hunter being the number one and maybe move on from Brian Thomas Jr.? I'm just speculating. I don't think there's anything to that because I like Aaron's plan better. But I would say overall, like, you're expecting more out of Brian Thomas Jr. considering how well the offense did, like, down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Brian Thomas Jr. did not have a good year this year. I did get a touchdown this game. I think the thing with Travis Hunter, I actually think he's a better wide receiver than he is a defensive back, personally.
Yeah.
From what I've seen.
I think so.
You know, but like we just mentioned, they've got three really good wide receivers, and they just paid Jacoby Myers a 3-year, $60 million extension. I don't know what Parker Washington's contract looks like, but Thomas is in the second year of a 5-year, you know, rookie contract. So we'll see what they do. And they got Strange, a good tight end. They got the two good running backs. I mean, they're really a team that's loaded for the future. If you look at what their team is roster is built, they're not really paying anybody a lot of money outside of Trevor Lawrence at this point.
I do want to give one shout out to the Bills defensive coordinator. They were really tightening up in the second half of the season. I think they've been playing really, really well, and they had a hell of a game plan in this game. So I'm really curious to see how they move forward. And I like them, man. They just have a puncher's chance in every game. So that's all you can ask for.
Well, you got them in the Super Bowl against the Niners, Rams. So we'll be fading you on those picks all this week and next if those teams advance, Rome.
All good, man. All good. Last game we'll cover for the wild card weekend, 49ers, Eagles. Another great epic game. Eagles, I think it was like the most Eagles-like game all season long. They looked good one half. They didn't look good the other, especially on offense. The play calling has been so shaky. Their offensive coordinator's house got egged early in the year. People want him fired. Even Hurts was not like really adamant, like giving like a son of endorsements. He's going to be gone. Fifth OC in 5 years for Hurts. And they had every opportunity to take this game away too. They're at home. As I was breaking down the game, you know, I like the quarterback. I like the coach, you know, favoring the Niners, but Purdy had two like weird interceptions, like what the fuck interceptions. They had no chance of being completed right into the coverage. I believe they had like a fumble recovery as well. Couldn't capitalize. The Niners defense bend, but they did not break. Only allowed a couple field goals. They're down at the half, right by like 1 point or so. And Purdy, McCaffrey, and what's his face, you know, like doing like that option play, that a wide receiver who I guess was
Jennings.
Yeah. Was like one of the best quarterbacks in high school that no one knew about, had a great pass, but like that catch was so much better by McCaffrey, like over the shoulder into the end zone. That was so beautiful. That was so beautiful. I feel bad for Kittle going out. I was watching with a whole bunch of Niner fans and they're like, oh, this game's over. I'm like, dude, just fucking relax. All right. Just give
it
next fan up.
Did you talk with your Niner fans friends about the electrical power station theory over there?
Okay. I did. They said they heard about it.
I mean, to me, yeah. It was gaining more traction over the weekend.
Dude, it's valid, man.
I think it's 100% valid.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm buying it. I'm buying it all. No, great game though. Great game. Shanahan, Saleh, hell of a game plan. Thoughts on that game? Bye bye Eagles. I hate the Eagles fans, so I'm so glad they're out.
I mean, I can't say much as a Bears fan watching the offense the first half. They generally had in a bunch of these games. But, man, I just don't know what the Eagles offense ever is. Like, it
doesn't. I don't think they know either.
Like, you hand it off to Saquon. He makes some plays. The offense and the passing tree just seems very rudimentary when you're watching it, unless I'm missing something. But, like, I just never get, like, oh, this should be something dynamic. And it's just, it never is. And then we spend constantly so much time talking about A.J. Brown and, you know, Sirianni. Like, what was it, in the first half? Sirianni's yelling at A.J. Brown or whatever, but then they're cool. But then A.J. Brown, a crucial drop, you know, when
two,
they
two
needed him.
Two big drops in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, when they needed him the most. And so, I don't know. It's one of those, like, dysfunctional things that just works. And so you live with it until it becomes, like, so much where it's not successful. And I just never know, like, I think Jalen Hurts is good, but then sometimes I just don't know. Like, maybe he's not. It gets in the way. He's averaging 4.8 yards a completion in that game. Just like, I can't even stretch.
It was really windy
really.
Though. It was like what, 29 miles per hour at one point.
I thought his passes in
the fourth quarter especially were like right on the money and no one could catch him. I'm not sure if it was too much, if it was too windy. But you're right, Jalen Hurts, like, is he good, is he bad? But he definitely comes through with the clutch. And I don't think this game was on him at all.
I don't think so either. I mean, I know way too many Eagles fans, and you mentioned the offensive coordinator. That's who they're blaming. I don't know where it falls into Sirianni. Guy wins a Super Bowl last year, and he's just constantly on, you know, the hot seat. And it's funny too, where we talk about these coaches that are in the hot seat, whether it's LaFleur or Harbaugh gets fired and stuff. And these guys are like the number one coach everywhere. I saw an interesting thing, like, all these guys get fired or are going to be fired. They're the number one candidates. If Sirianni got fired today, like, no one would want this guy.
No one even hire him as an OC.
No, but he won a Super Bowl last year.
but he knows how to manage, like you said, bad, like, I don't know, guys that don't fit in, but he somehow makes a puzzle fit, right?
Yep. Sirianni from
the
before?
Puzzle fit.
Was he on the
Indianapolis.
Colts?
Yeah, Indianapolis. Because he was friends with, he's good buddies with Frank Wright.
Yeah.
So, and I think he's buddies with Philip Rivers as well. I heard they, you know, they talk or text once a week as well. But yeah, I mean, the OC is going to be gone in Philadelphia. And you guys, to Jalen Hurts. Is Jalen Hurts good? If you give him a good OC, he's good, right?
Yeah.
You give him Shane Steichen, he's an MVP. You give him Kellen Moore, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
You give him whoever this guy is and the other guy before that, and he's below average quarterback in this league.
Yeah, they've had really two good OCs, and they've gone to the Super Bowl both times when they had a good
OC. And they've both had coaches.
It's only been
now.
1 year.
They're doing pretty good.
And then they leave, and it's a rough year. They just never had an identity. They had so much more talent than the Niners, but the Niners just play with the passion, with unity. It was a great game.
This was the biggest upset of the week. This is the biggest surprise to me because I thought the Niners had no chance going in.
Nah.
I mean, the spread went from 3.5 to 6. Everybody in the sharps put their Christmas money that they got on this game because Philadelphia. I'm extremely shocked they lost this game.
I was the only one.
49ers had no 49ers had no business winning this game. I'm actually glad the 49ers won because I think they're a huge, huge fade next week. I think Seattle's going to blow them out, but. You know, I kind of started thinking about it. I mean, there's a lot of candidates for coach of the year, but I think Kyle Shanahan is your coach of the year. What he's done with this group and the players and everybody that's gotten hurt. I know Ben Johnson, Liam Cohen, Mike Vrabel have had all great years. For the 49ers to go into Philadelphia and beat the Super Bowl champs, that roster, losing Kittle, not having Ricky Purcell, all these guys, it's a phenomenal job. Because if you would have told me they were going to do it, no way. I thought that there was one out of the two games I liked the most this week was the Patriots and the Eagles to win. Pretty handily, Patriots did. I'm shocked that the Eagles lost. And if Sirianni hadn't won that Super Bowl, Jason, he'd be out of a job. Let's just put it simply the putt.
Oh, I agree. I mean, we were talking before he won the Super Bowl last year. They were going to fire him.
Yeah. And then we were talking about this year.
Yeah.
Well, he has a 4-year extension, so he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't.
At least not yet. But if they got rid of him, Matt LaFleur would be there. Shane Steichen, who I think they were hoping to get fired, that way they could bring him back as the OC, as I was talking about a few weeks back.
Yeah, I don't think Shanahan wins Coach of the Year, but I don't disagree. It's probably Vrabel's, I'm assuming. But yeah, don't disagree with you, Aaron. I think this is why it's always crazy to me, Rome. You know, I think you say it, like, and I hear it from 49ers fans, like, they don't like Shanahan, you know, because, you know, whatever his play calling in some of the biggest moments or whatever. But like, man, like, you got a coach that really makes you always competitive. Like, they put, no matter who he's got or whatever, they're going to make the playoffs and do what needs to be done. And like, and you can't, those are those things where, like, I hate the thought of, like, firing coaches like that. Or you just want to, like, you know, we talked about a little bit with LaFleur. I mean, you're going through it with Tomlin right now, and I know there's the fresh race in there, but like, man, you're just always kind of relevant. Where you can look at organizations, the Jets, and, you know, I don't know, we're looking at the Titans, the Raiders. God, how many guys are they paying right now? It's like, when you go around the merry-go-round, like, if you're gonna move on somebody that, like, has a culture, has a system, has a, like, a level of coaching that makes you always, like, really good, it's hard. It's tough to, like, see, like, oh, I got to fire that guy because we aren't just the best all the time. Because 32 teams go home unhappy every year. And, like, if you're just striving for always being happy, it just goes downhill. Like, that was one of the things that last year we were talking about, Shanahan being on the hot seat for the 49ers. I was like, please, yeah, fire him. I think everyone would want to take him. And what are you going to get better than that?
Oh, no. Sometimes, it's good. But, you know, if you're never going to the big dance, then what's the point, right? So I totally get why people want to move off. Like, Tomlin, I just think it's time.
Tomlin's lost, what, 7 straight playoff games, Rome? Yep. When we started the show. Yep. What, Shanahan's been to 2 Super Bowls. He's lost against what some people might consider the second best quarterback in the last 20 years behind Brady and Patrick Mahomes, however you want to rate the quarterback.
Well, they should have won those, and I'm not going to put that.
They should have won at least one. Yeah. They could have won one of them. I mean, he got there, Jimmy Garoppolo, who's, you know, literally a backup quarterback in this
good,
league.
He was good.
But here's what Jason has always touched on. Everybody that goes in the Shanahan system is good. Like, I mean, honestly, Brock Purdy had a shitty game. I would have thought about maybe even yanking him and bringing Mac Jones in, because Mac Jones throws a better ball. He's got more velocity, and he's better for windy conditions than which it was. But he's not as mobile and can get away from the pass rush like a Brock Purdy can, to kind of extend some plays. Look, if Kyle Shanahan got fired today, he'd be the number one coach to be hired, the same with Matt LaFleur. All these guys are competent head coaches that sometimes get stuck in their own way. It just happens, yeah. You know, ego, whatever it is. You know, we come on the show and we kind of harp on some teams or stuff, and we're like, kind of look back and go like, oh man, I'm just in my own way on that. But Kyle Shanahan, he has that, what is he, 1-37 in fourth quarters when he's behind, whatever, some kind of crazy stat. It's kind of hard to believe.
But then if you look, it changed.
Yeah, but then you look at, he's got a winning record, and nobody goes like, oh, wait, he's just dominating teams quarters 1-3. Nobody ever talks about that in all the games he wins. It's kind of like a weird stat where you're great one way and not another. I mean, like Tomlin, guys won 19 straight seasons of winning record, longest tenure ever in NFL history, and people want him gone. Just give him a quarterback.
No, I think it's changed a lot around Shanahan this year. I've kind of admired at the job he's done with the Niners, and I think the sentiment has been the same around the Bay Area as well. They're not really pushing for him to, you know, to leave. They definitely want Saleh to stay. They don't want him to leave either, and they're just hoping for a healthier team next year.
I don't think Saleh is getting a head coaching job.
Well, they're worried. They think he's gone. So I don't think he's gone. I really don't see the right situation for him this year. It's weird because you might have, depending on what happens for the rest of the playoffs, this might be like a weird year where like the jobs aren't great, but then we're going to have like a whole bunch of premium head coaches available to be hired. That's kind of odd.
Well, I think that's where like which situations, like the Ravens situation right now,
right,
is probably the like the most attractive one. I know we talked about this before. I guess
the Giants one is.
I guess.
I like the job.
I know you guys
job.
Like it more
I like
than
that,
me.
I like that job for.
I mean,
I like that job for. I think maybe they go Harbaugh, man.
I think Harbaugh goes there.
I think they want that Tom Coughlin type feel, young quarterback, good young defense. It feels like there's vibes there.
I don't disagree, but I just think overall, when you think of these jobs right now, I mean, half of these jobs are crap. Like the Titans job, like I think there's just something about that ownership group and everything. Though. They do, but there's fallout from the Vrabel firing and whatever it was from that ownership group.
Well, I wouldn't want to work for that ownership at all.
That's what they're talking about.
That's what you got to sign up for, yeah. Right? With Cleveland and all these organizations.
Cleveland's the same the
Jets,
way.
That's not available yet, but
that's just, I don't know. There's questions. So yeah,
if
some
Tomlin
of these
leaves, that would be a great job because at least you know the ownership's going to have your support no matter what.
I guess the only question about that Steelers job, and I couldn't even tell you who the Steelers general manager on because I don't think he's out there, but they always have, hey, the Rooneys are great owners. They've had, what, 3 head coaches in 70 years or whatever it is for you guys. But to question some of Tomlin's stuff is like, Aaron's right. Who's his quarterback, Ben? What's the roster construction of his team to make them like effective? Like, he gets you 9 wins and makes you winning, but man, like it's a brutal watch of like what we've been have to endure offensively that, are they bringing in the right talent for this coach right now? And I may, that'd be my question.
Well, I think the Steelers, kind of weird. I know we haven't touched on it. They're the opposite of the league, right? All their money spent on defense. If you look at the league, everybody's really spends money on offense. I mean, the Rams, all their money spent on offense. They just drafted, young talent, first round, second round, third round guys.
Rams spent a lot of money on defense too, though.
Who?
Rams.
No, Rams got nobody spending on defense. They got rid of Donald retired, and then they got Ramsey, so they got nothing but young guys. I mean, they've signed some guys to extensions now, but the Steelers spent all their money on defense. It's not been very good. It's an aging defense, and we talked on it. Who's been their quarterback? I mean, when Roethlisberger was in his prime, they were really good, and then he got hurt, and he got washed up, and they haven't had anybody since. I mean, you've had Mason Rudolph, Rodgers, Kenny Pickett. I mean, these guys are emergency third string quarterbacks for the most part. So I think they can go out there. Look, Malik Willis is going to be on the market. You can probably get him for $25-30 million a year. I don't think he's going to be able to command much more than that.
That's crazy for Willis right now.
That's what I think it's going to cost to get him. I mean, he's shown in the 2 years under LaFleur. And 5-6 starts that he's looked really, really good.
I think you're buying him more than everybody else.
I'm buying him high.
Well, then you guys could keep him, and then we'll take Love. How about that?
I'll do the swap.
Yeah.
I mean, you're saving the money for it.
Yeah. All right. So we got divisional round next week, Saturday and Sunday, 2 games apiece. Winners move on to the conference championship. I already kind of know which way you guys are going. You guys are always going by the favorites. Jason's going for his team.
Well, there's a lot of dogs this week, Rome. I like dogs this week.
Yeah, Aaron and I were talking about this before. I mean, the Bears were big dogs early, and that line's coming down a little bit right now. And I think it comes down even more with this weather report in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, open 4.5, down to 3.5. Broncos were 1.5-point dog. That's now a pick'em. And then the Texans +3. I like that. And not the favorite I like this week is Seattle. I think they put a pounding on the Niners.
I'll take the Niners with the points.
I think what you saw with the Texans did to the Steelers, similar game with the 49ers get done to them.
I like the Texans against the Pats.
I do too.
I like the Bills
like
over
the Broncos.
Broncos.
I like the Broncos to end the Bills.
No way. They haven't been that great at home either. And then I'm just going with the Rams to upset the Bears.
The Rams are the favorite, Rome.
I know they're favorite, but it's going to be cold, and it's in Chicago.
Rams might still win, but if you can get, if you got the original line at 4.5, I really like Chicago at 4.5. Too many points right now for the Rams that are traveling back to the Midwest East Coast 3 times in 4 weeks. It's brutal, brutal stretch for them. It's going to be a close game, I think.
Brutal. All right, they'll do it. Let's see. By the way, man, I can't remember before we go. I forgot who I was listening to, but the Packers playoff woes over the last like 10, 15 years, like it's been like devastating loss after devastating loss, blown leads, Kaepernick, the Niners especially. I think Rodgers has lost his last six playoff games as well. So he's on a losing streak on the way out. Just brutal over the last 15 years. All right, we'll switch gears and talk a little college football. We're back to recap the college football playoffs. We had the Fiesta Bowl this past week. We haven't recorded since last week, last Wednesday, right? Last Wednesday, right before the playoffs started on Thursday. It was Miami against Ole Miss. Miami was favored by 3.5. Ole Miss played really, really fucking good. They would not go away at all. Almost pulled it off, but Miami and Carson Beck, kind of a mixed bag in that game as well, but just did enough to pull it through. And the line, like Miami's line was just so fucking huge. They really collapsed the pocket on Ole Miss too, especially a few times. Chambliss had some really great throws, came in the clutch, almost got that, almost brought them back down to win that. I was kind of surprised just like what a great game it was. It definitely hit the over. I think we were leaning on the under on this one. I can't remember. It was over 52. Over under 52. Aaron, you took Ole Miss with the points, leaning with the Miami win, and they barely missed it by half a point. It was a tight contest, but Miami is going to get the play at home next Monday. And then we have the Peach Bowl with Oregon, Indiana. Indiana just playing lights out, looking like one of the most dominant teams that we've had in the past decade. Not sure how you guys feel about that, but they just manhandled Oregon. And the ending score was not even close of like how badly they got their ass beat. So let's start off with the Fiesta Bowl, though. Thoughts on that? We'll go from there.
Yeah, you said it kind of in the recap of that game. We talked about it in the preview and where Miami's strength is and what Mario Cristobal got this team. Like, yeah, the trenches, you know, the defensive line, the offensive line, you know, where this team is able to excel. And in the past, that's where always SEC teams own the line of scrimmage. They had all the incredible skill players, but, you know, they had those, you know, big guys up front on both ends to be able to dominate. And that's what Miami has. I mean, they got a great complement of skilled players, but the offensive line making the holes for, you know, Fletcher on the ground, who had over 133 yards rushing, even at the backup at 54 yards rushing in the game. That opened things up for Beck. You know, Beck didn't have to be spectacular. He obviously had the interception, but, you know, Marion in the pass game was able to, you know, get over 100 yards receiving. And so, you know, offensively, just moving the ball through the trenches on the offensive line was there. And defensively, yeah, I mean, Chambliss has been tough all year, even in the elite SEC defenses to take down. And that's where I think Miami was able to keep pace and keep this game tight. I mean, early on, it kind of felt like, man, is Miami just going to have this? Ole Miss was able to kind of stay in the game, you know, as they kind of exchanged touchdowns and field goals there in the fourth quarter. But, all props to Miami go into this. I think this is the team we expected at the beginning of the year that they would be. Just didn't know what the in-game stuff was going to be for Cristobal and the coaching end, like we always talk about. So, but they kept true, man. They kept the running game going. They opened things up for Beck. Beck had to make plays when kind of necessary in the game. And I mean, is it too early to go on my SEC rant, Rome? You want me to save that, or you want me to do this now?
You've been on a lot of SEC rants all year, so if you want to recap what you've been doing.
It's not what I've been doing, Rome. It's just what we're talking about. You know, yeah. I mean, we had to have the discussion about my Notre Dame Fighting Irish not getting into the playoff, and it was Miami versus Notre Dame, and blah, 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 all about that. But we had to get three-loss Alabama in after they get blown out in the SEC championship game. And then we got to hear, you know, Paul Feinbaum and all these other SEC homers come out. Feinbaum's supposed to lead the country. That's what I saw. There was some interview. If an SEC team didn't make it to the national title, he said so on something at the beginning of the year that he was leaving the country. And so I think he should at this point, because now 3 years in a row, there's no SEC team in the final. So we expand this thing to 12 teams. And we get, what, five SEC teams made the college football playoff this year?
That is correct, yes.
Only one of them makes the Final Four. I know they had to play each other or whatever in some of those things. But the best team that you get in the Final Four is one that their coach left the team. And then You don't even get them to the championship game, and this is supposed to be the best conference that defaults. Everything's harder in the SEC and da-da-da-da-da. And yes, that was true pre-NIL 10 years ago. Everything's harder. It's no longer the case, man. Indiana, dominant. Miami, they got guys able to get to this game. Oregon, wasn't a great showing. We'll talk about that a little later, but still got some guys too. There is just more depth across the breadth of college football. So as we look at, 10 months from now, and we got to have another annoying conversation about the college football playoff, and then we're pining over like the 9th and 10th SEC school and how their, three loss schedule should be in because of this and that. Like, I want to remind these moments when we get into the playoffs and the SEC's got to play other conferences. They are not far and away above everybody else. Ole Miss is a really good team. This was a really good game. However, you're still not showing up when it matters the most, and your conference isn't as hard as what you're talking about. Yes, it's difficult and this and that, but your teams aren't showing up at the biggest moment, and that's 3 years in a row right now. So Miami, Indiana, both better than the SEC schools, obviously, as they clear their way to the national title. But man, what are we going to be talking about, Rome? I'll book it in mid-November. We're going to be talking about like three-loss Missouri and three-loss Tennessee and why they should be into the playoff versus like one-loss BYU or something like that.
Hey, don't forget Texas and Vanderbilt should have been in the playoff over Miami and Notre Dame as well. So it should have been like seven teams in the SEC.
Right.
Look, the SEC no longer is the top dog. It is the Big Ten. The Big Ten is overtaking them. I mean, the playoffs now have shown that three straight years. And, Miami with two wins in this playoff, Rome, two wins against the SEC. So, and this is a team that can't even win their own conference in the last two decades. So what does that tell you where the SEC is at? Still a really good conference, but not, they shouldn't be going to the bargain. Basically, they don't have pocket aces anymore. They can't go to the bargain table and say we want 14 teams, six teams guaranteed in. They've lost their stake in that. That's off the table. The Big Ten's now running the show. The Big Ten possibly can claim another national title here if Indiana can beat Miami. Going back, look at Ole Miss got off to a really struggling start. Trinidad Chambliss struggled. They didn't really have much rhythm going in that game early. They had, Lacey, the running back, the hamstring injury had kind of really hampered them offensively, too. He had that 75-yard TD run to start the game in the second quarter. Doesn't play the rest of that half. Then he comes back and kind of in and out, not sure where he was at. We've talked about Miami, the defense, the trenches, and all that, but Miami wins if Carson Beck does what? Doesn't turn the ball over. Yeah, he had one turnover, but you look at their losses. He had three, he had two. They turn the ball over a lot. Miami gets in trouble. They basically, like Jason said, run the ball good. And situationally, Carson Beck has made big plays with his arm, and in this game, his leg, right? He didn't force any throws. Hey, let me get outside the pocket. Let me run into touchdown with 18 seconds left, whatever it was. You're going to the national championship at your own home stadium. It's a great win for Miami. Mario Cristobal, he's an interesting guy, man. Guy's got more facial expressions than you can bring. You're like, he's real tense, like, oh, I'll get fiery, pump fist, all that kind of stuff. He's like a Dan Campbell of the college game at Miami. That's who he reminds me of.
He was pretty animated afterwards.
Yeah. He's your typical ex, lineman, football coach, just like, oh, get up in there. And for Miami, man, it's good for them. I think it's going to be a really good national title game against Indiana, better than people think. I love Miami getting the points in this game.
What's the points right now?
It's gone up to 8.5. So not a lot of respect right now for Miami. I think Miami can hang and play with Indiana. But they got good defense, good run game. They're tough in the trenches. Trinidad Chambliss, that second half, Rome, you touched on, he was on fire. He was lighting them up. He was getting it going. If there had been more time left in that game, like we've seen in the NFL playoffs, give a guy 2 minutes, I think Ole Miss comes back and probably wins that game. But for the U, look, we never said they didn't deserve to be in the playoff. You can make the argument, sure, they've been over Notre Dame. They were one of the best 12 teams all year. We already talked about James Madison. Tulane had no business being in this playoff, and that showed basically Oregon blows them out, beats Texas Tech. Texas Tech, I think, is going to be a lot better next year now that they've got a 5-star quarterback coming in the transfer portal. So they're going to be a team to be reckoned with for sure. But the SEC, yeah, they've got some issues. They got Sam Levitt going to LSU, it sounds like. So they got, looks like Lane Kiffin's got his quarterback in the future. I think Texas is loading up in the transfer portal. They're going to be really good next year. But it's going to be interesting. Being the Big Ten, SEC, I think the ACC will get better as well. And the Big 12, obviously, with Texas Tech. So it's going to be a tough road going forward with NIL, money being spread out evenly. Guys are spending money. You got big booster. Mark Cuban's dropping 5, 10, 15 mil, whatever he's dropping on the Indiana roster.
Well, I still think the SEC is still pretty deep, though, man. Like, the teams at the bottom are pretty competitive.
The SEC's still good, and I don't want to get that in there. Like they have really good teams. They do. You want to say they care
but the dominance
more?
Dominance is gone.
Yeah, they do care more. Overall, the conference, like their fan base is embedded into what college football is.
Nuts.
You know, just deep. It is built different, 100%. But now you're in a game here where hey, the local Alabama car dealership is able to maybe finesse things in the pre-NIL era to get guys to come to town. Now, major markets, bigger cities with bigger boosters that, hey, they can be over the top paying guys to make sure things are won. Like, it makes things a lot different for how, you're able to secure stuff. Miami, I always hear about this, Miami and USC. And USC hasn't got back to where they're at through, but hey, big cities where everything's kind of, you got big newspapers, big media outlets, like the local Tuscaloosa beat writer isn't going to be doing an investigative piece about some, five-star recruit that got such and such paid under the table. In LA, they're going to be tracking down Reggie Bush's parents on what new house he got down in San Diego or something like that, because, we got all the media investigation. So it's different during those times. And now, hey, big boosters that went to these universities every which way is like, I want to see my team be good. Hey, I'm going to make sure I'm going to buy X quarterback or get this, that, and the other to make it. Cause this is big business now too. We talked about the different stuff on like private equity money and where this stuff gets in. Like, football is king, whether it's professional or college. And now college football is going to find another level of profits. And if I can make Indiana University into the heavyweight they are, and then, okay, all of a sudden I got money flowing into this university that ways, people are going to make these investments because they're going to be a return on it.
Well, what Indiana has done has been impressive, man. What Sanandi has done in this two years, it is.
But it doesn't happen with NIL, and it doesn't happen about money.
Yeah. But else has done it? Like, this is like unprecedented. Like, this is like crazy.
I mean, look, what Chris McNally's done at Indiana is crazy. But if we go back 5-6 years ago, no way Indiana's this good right now. I mean, they just wouldn't be able to buy players, transfer portal, all that. I mean, you can go from being a bad team to really good overnight.
Yeah, but still, like, that this is still an anomaly, like how good they became. No one's doing that. Like, you still can't get there.
It's the best.
You're
going to
tell me Missouri's going to become a national champion in like 2 years?
No, it's
Look at Vanderbilt. Yeah. Look at Vanderbilt, guys.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, Vanderbilt's been a laughing stock of college football my entire life. Even Nick Saban for the last 2 years on TV has laughed, and now he's like, I can't talk shit on them. They're real. They're legit. They're spending money now.
I think when you look at the transfer portal and how many guys are kind of like available, Rome, and you can make these quick fixes. I mean, this is, you got a lot of cap space in the NFL or whatever it like is. Like, hey, I can make some quick advancements. I mean, Signetti doing it better than most. Like, I had talking to friends this weekend. Is he going to be up? He wins a national championship. Is this the type of guy that's going to be like, all right, I'm going to go to the NFL now? Because like
I don't think so.
I don't think
I mean,
so
he's got
either.
A $94 million dollar deal at Indiana. Why would you go to the NFL and get fired in 3 years?
I agree, because I think these guys like Signetti that hey they could be a master of this era and how this works. I mean, some guys aren't built for this because
Signetti
has
like that Saban aura. He's really confident.
We work with Saban.
Yeah, he's building something there.
But it's different.
I mean,
Saban got out because he didn't like the way this was going and what he was going to have to do to get there. But Signetti got a master.
I don't think Alabama has as much money as some of these other schools. I mean, another thing about Indiana, let's just be honest. Indiana last year had they basically had the Patriots schedule of the NFL equivalent to last year. They didn't play anybody. Yes. They played two teams, and they got smoked by 40 on both games. So Indiana was highly overrated last year. And then we came into this year and we're like, oh, maybe they're not that good. And then, Mendoza went from an okay, good quarterback at Cal to now like, oh shit, you put some real talent around him and some other NIL guys. And they, to Cignetti's credit, they beefed up where they weren't good at along the trenches, added an elite quarterback with some more skilled players, because he is a great, like you mentioned, Rome, talent evaluator. That was what he was. He was Nick Saban's recruiting coordinator.
Well, Mendoza came from Cal. Like he wasn't.
Did Cal even make a bowl game in the 2 years he started? I don't think so.
Look, now he's the Heisman winner. Moore with Oregon. He was with UCLA, and now people are saying he's the best quarterback going in the draft.
Exactly.
Like it's kind of weird. Like,
yeah,
he got killed.
Now Oregon's got your boy Raiola signed there. So
I did. Yeah, I did see that. All right, back to this Miami game and Ole Miss before we go. It just seemed like I had to look it up because it seemed like Miami controlled the whole fucking game. Like, despite it being only 31-27, they had time possession, 41 minutes. Ole Miss took advantage of the whole 18 minutes that they had the ball. Like, they just, especially in the second half. I think if Lane Kiffin was coaching this game, though, I really like this matchup. I would definitely think that Ole Miss wins this one. And it's like that big what if. What if he got a chance to coach this team? I know they played lights out because it was like kind of like the fuck you mentality to their coach. But this was the game that they could have used Kiffin in. Like, this was a perfect Lane Kiffin. He would have outcoached, I think, Miami's coach by a mile. So that's been like stuck in the back of my head since that game.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I know, thinking back to before that Mississippi State game where they were kind of like pushing him to make a decision X, Y, and Z, and why this was taking so long, because it was probably weighing on him that this is a great opportunity. This is a great team I have, and you see how far, you know, they go to the Final Four basically of this. And if you don't have all of the program disruption and you have him and the entire staff all kind of locked in the focus, like, is it different? I don't know. It might not be. It may be like they may be playing with a chip on their shoulder because, you know, he left and now these guys are like, okay, you left us here, and they had a different level. But I think it is a great what if, because we could be looking back 3 years from now, 4 years from now at LSU. What's going to be Lane's success? Does he get back to this point with LSU? Or is it going to be like, man, you had your opportunity, you left it on the table, and you never got to the same heights as LSU?
One thing about Lane, like, everyone says he doesn't win wherever he goes, but he's done pretty well at his last few stops. He got Florida International, whatever it was, Atlantic,
really
competitive in year 1-2. What was the other one?
Well, he had Tennessee was there for a year, and then USC, right?
USC, yep.
The Tennessee was he really two years, 3 years? Well, yeah, but I mean, I think Rome, to your point, he's never really hung around in a place long enough to build it up. Like Ole Miss, he kind of this. What was he? 5 years, 6 years at Ole Miss?
I think this is his fifth or sixth year. But
was he two years or 3 years before USC got rid of him? Because they fired him at the airport on the tarmac, right?
USC's
right?
That's way before the Tennessee gig. Because
no,
after USC,
no,
that's
Tennessee
when
Tennessee was first.
Yeah,
he did one year at Tennessee and jumped ship.
Then jumped
that's
to
why Tennessee
USC.
Hates him. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but then he.
I mean, I get it. Yeah.
Went to
you
Alabama.
Go
then
home.
Went to Florida Atlantic. I think he's going to definitely turn around LSU. So
yeah, I mean, will LSU be patient with them? You know, that'll be key. I mean, I think Lane Kiffin, there's two things. I don't believe he thinks this team could have won a national title. That's why I think he jumped ship. If he believed these guys could have, I think he would have stayed. I think if you look at how he's doing his whole assistant coaches, he expected him to get beat by Georgia like everybody did. He basically was like, I ain't got to worry about my assistant coaches. They're going to get beat by Georgia. Then they lost. Or they won, and he's like, oh, shit, like, ah, fuck, who am I going to give you guys? I don't want
to
give you
nobody
all these
expected
guys.
Him to go this
yeah,
far.
Yeah, he looked, you know, he got an egg on his face, right? He basically says, I care about the team, but he really doesn't care about the team because he takes half the coaches, and then, you know, they got coaches on the sideline for Ole Miss. They got a guy from East Carolina that's taking over as the OC next year.
I don't think it's so much about the team. I think it's more like, you know, do you want to drive a Chevy or do you want to drive a Ferrari? You know,
that's basically what he said. He says LSU is a better job than Ole Miss.
Yeah, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But he had a really nice car.
Is it a better job if he's not there? So, I mean, if say he stays at Ole Miss and who knows who LSU would have hired, would Ole Miss still be considered better, have a higher, you know, pathway going forward than say whoever LSU brought in? Or
what
is
he's done
Lane
at
Kiffin
Ole Miss,
there?
What Cignetti has done with Indiana, I think it's very similar. Lane Kiffin, he actually looked happy. I think he was building something really cool. We'll see if he regrets the decision. But I think Lane Kiffin was sorely missed in a game like against Miami. I think they would have won at least by a touchdown or so against Miami.
I think they would have got beat by Georgia if they had Lane Kiffin.
Possibly.
He always gets owned by Georgia personally.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kirby Smart has his number.
Yeah. Yeah, still does.
Definitely could have been it. I think it would be the one great what if from, and I think it's a good question. But going to LSU, there's obviously something behind there when it comes to resources, and that's what these guys are looking at. And LSU definitely, historically, has more resources, has a better, you know, culture of getting talent and whatever the recruiting is going to be there when it comes to LSU's like history versus what Ole Miss is at. And I mean, like Lane Long, I mean, the guy was coaching at Florida Atlantic. You talk about in Boca Raton, you know, down in Florida, and goes to Ole Miss and is talking about like the Brown Lake or whatever is in Oxford in Mississippi. Like it's a different place, and going down to LSU, like, hey, this has got national championship history and boosters that are going to, hey, this is the check. So
I think going back, I think Kiffin will do good at LSU. Just will LSU be patient with them? Like, is this going to be one of these things where, like,
I don't think Brian Kelly should have ever been hired. I think Kiffin's made for LSU.
If you win, you're made for LSU. I mean, look at Ed Orgeron. If you would have told me Ed Orgeron would have fitted in as a head coach at LSU,
I like that.
I would have never. I mean, look, they had what Les Miles was there for what 13, 14, 15 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't had a guy like Lane Kiffin at LSU since a young Nick Saban.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest.
Yeah. Well, I never liked LSU, only the Joe Burrow year. So.
And that might be the greatest college football team of this century,
to
be honest.
That was a good team.
That was a good team.
Joe Burrow, come to the Steelers, man. We'll treat you well. We'll treat you well. Let's make it happen. I had a dream about it the other day. It was really weird. Dreaming about quarterbacks on your team.
You need one. Steelers need one.
Yeah. All right, so let's go switch gears to the Peach Bowl. Oregon, Indiana, it was 56-22, but it was never that close. Oregon got some points in the second half, but honestly, it was done in the second quarter. I can't remember what the score was. Maybe you guys can refresh my memory. It was just a little too long. I feel like it was like 30-something to 7 or 14,
35-7 at the half, Rome. 35-7 at the half.
It was an ass-whooping, dude. It was an ass-whooping. They didn't belong. Mendoza, I'm not sold on him on being the best quarterback coming out or like if he's the right guy. I think he's going to get eaten alive in the NFL, especially if he ends up in the Raiders. That's my opinion. But he seems like a nice guy. He says all the right things. A little too cheesy for my taste. But he completely eviscerated this Oregon defense, and I gotta be honest with you, man. Like, I was not expecting like a this much of an ass whooping, like a quadruple down. You know, was not seeing this.
I don't think the blowout was something we can see, but I think Aaron questioned Oregon's team the entire season of like, this could be a potential outcome because they weren't as good as last season. They did get the favorable kind of pull in the bracket right now to get into this position. Never really had the really convincing win really throughout the year. Not one that really jumps off the page.
Is their biggest win beating USC at home? I mean, who doesn't beat USC at home nowadays?
Utah,
no, that was Texas Tech.
Oh. Yeah. So I think that was to the point where, man, like in Indiana, I guess we've just been doubting them all year. And Oregon, this isn't the team from a year ago. I see what you're saying about Mendoza for the pros, Rome. I think entirely depends on what coach they're bringing in. Like, what's the investment that Raiders team's going to make? So, like, I think there is a universe where he's going to be really good in the pros. But I think the situation with the talent around him, don't love it. Like the offensive line, they got a ton to do there. What's the coach is going to bring in to develop him? Or if they're trying to get leadership guy, what's the offensive staff to go in? So like that's the match I think you're looking at. I think unanimous where he's at. I think coming out of that game, the more person I'm concerned about is Moore if he goes to the Jets, because that looks like his future in that game would be like the Jets game right there. And I know a lot of people on Twitter were saying that too, because man, that game didn't look great for Moore. And he goes to the Jets, I think it just looks just as bad.
Well, like a lot of the talk before the game was like, if Dante Moore has a big game, he might be the first one.
Well, Mel Kiper Jr. has Dante Moore number ranked two. Ahead of Montoza.
Yeah, and then he gets killed, dude. He got sacked.
Look at, I mean,
that turnovers, some fumbles that led to touchdowns. It was like complete, like the worst case scenario for Moore. But he's only had like one or two seasons of starting.
I think he's made 20 starts. He played for a bad UCLA team, you know, Chip Kelly's last year. I've heard there's a chance he could still stay at Oregon and Raiola could redshirt.
Yeah.
You know, hey, why not collect $2 million in redshirt? That's not a bad gig if you're part of that family. I'm not big on Moore. I mean, I see he's got arm talent, decent mobility. I would take Mendoza over him. And to Jason's point, I mean, Moore at the Jets, I mean, that's he's going to end up looking like Justin Fields and all the other guys that have gone there. It's not going to end well. Doesn't look good. So Mendoza, Rome, like you guys touched on, I mean, obviously the Raiders have the number one pick. It's unless they trade out, they're probably going to take a quarterback, and Mendoza would likely be the candidate. I mean, he's a big guy, big arm, 6'5". He can run. You know, he's a bit quirky, nerdy, kind of like an Andrew Luck, how he talks, you know. I mean, he always talks a big game. He seems like a nice guy, smart, intelligent guy. Obviously, he knows, you know, how to read defenses, make some big-time throws. I like him, but, you know, to you guys' point, I mean, a lot of these quarterbacks that are average are good. What do they have one thing in common? They got a good OC, so guy calling the play. So you give him a guy, you put him on the Raiders team this year, he looked terrible. I don't care. He would look bad, and the Raiders might win one more game than what they did. But Indiana blew them out. I mean, Oregon, just the stupid turnovers. I mean, first play was a pick six, Rome. I think you commented on it, like, right off the bat. Like, first play is a pick six. Like, the two drives later, it's a fumble because the pass, he goes to throw the pass. It hits the running back's helmet as he goes by on the play action. It's a fumble. Like, you don't even blink. It's 28-7. And literally, if you take the turnovers out of the game, it's a 28-22 game. Basically, Indiana scored on short fields and basically a pick six because they got the ball inside the 20 like four times off turnovers. You eliminate that, and you got a decent game. They still lose. But, yeah, I mean, Oregon, I think even the announcers in Oregon said, like, we don't expect to really win a national title until 2026, 2027. Their roster is young but talented. So,
yeah.
Oregon was ahead of schedule, like Jason mentioned, and we talked about all year. Dan Lanning did a great job there, but he's losing both his coordinators. You know, Curtis Agnandi, he's going to keep both his coordinators this year, but they'll be gone next year because they're going to be hot coaches. These guys are going to get paid $6, $8 million to go somewhere else. So we're talking about players going places, but elite coaches and coordinators are going to get jobs and jump and get gigs coming up here soon as well.
So any thoughts from the Peach Bowl? I stopped watching it pretty early, to be honest with you.
I would say I was out pretty early too, given in that second quarter. So
yeah,
a lot of thoughts. I mean, we'll get into official predictions, but man, Cignetti's making it hard to really go against him in a lot of areas right now. He's laying it on, man. This is like his national championship to lose, it feels like right now.
I think they put a pounding on Miami.
Here's the funny thing. I think Miami's the most difficult matchup of all the teams in the playoffs for Curt Cignetti. I think Miami, Cristobal, he makes a ton of mistakes, but he's a rah-rah guy, right? So he's going to his team. Hey, look at Cignetti. He thinks we're dog shit. He thinks he's going to beat us up in the trenches. He's getting this team so fired up. Miami's going to come out and play. I love Miami +8.5. I'm not saying they win, but it's the lock of the national championship year. I love Miami 8.5. I would pound them and pound them hard. I think it's a close game.
It is a lot of points getting for a home team at a neutral site. Yeah.
Indiana does travel well, Rome. They'll have a good contingency crowd there. What was it? 80% of the fans there, 85 were a home crowd for them.
That was wild.
You know, Miami, I think it's going to be probably 50-50, 60-40. Indiana might have more fans, but I think Miami, they want to be the underdog. That's what they've been the whole year. The misfits. We didn't belong in the playoff. Cristobal have these guys built up. They're going to get after Mendoza. I think it's going to be a great national championship close game. I think Indiana ultimately probably wins it. But again, I'll take 8.5 all day.
Are we going to do a preview, or we're just going to stick to the it's not much a preview, right? You either like them or you don't.
I mean, we can do a preview. Well, that game's on a Monday. I mean, we could do a preview whenever we do our next, you know, football preview for NFL divisional games. I don't know, Thursday.
What are you leaning right now, Jason?
I agree with Aaron. I think it's a lot of points right now. And we talk, you know, battle in the trenches, both teams right there. Miami has the ability to keep it close compared to like Oregon and kind of what these teams going there. Like, I think the Beck turnover at probably the untimely would be something that would maybe lose them the game or swing that into turning it, you know, blowing it open to beyond the touchdown. But 8.5 is a lot of points for a national title game that is at your home site. And I don't think Miami shied away from some of these games so far this year.
I think once we get more into the preview, Indiana's played, what, 3 good teams this year. I mean, Oregon, the first time close game. Say what you want about Penn State. Penn State was as talented as any team in the country. They fell apart, but they took them to the wire. It was a 1-point win for Indiana, I believe.
Yeah.
And then Ohio State was a 3-point victory. So I think, you know, Jason's touched on it a lot. Miami, talent-wise, is as good as those teams. And it's a home game. It's going to be a good game. But yeah, 8.5. It was 7.5, went to 8.5. I liked it at 7.5. I love it at 8.5. Heck, if it goes to 9. But I got a feeling some Miami money, South Beach, you know, yacht, cocaine, whatever the money's going to come in late here on Miami, get that line down a little bit. They showed up against Ohio State when that line went from 9 to 7 before kickoff. So somebody in Miami, some booster in Miami's got a lot of money. They're going to get this line bet back down. So I'd get it at 8.5 now.
They did, yeah. All right. Any other comments for the semifinals? Fiesta or Peach? College football in general? Transfers? You guys kind of covered everything.
The portals are wide open right now. I think once this is over, I'll be curious on college football format play or the playoff changes. You know, what conference is potentially going to do. You know, I know there was the Notre Dame thing. I don't know if there's any more news on keeping out, you know, a 2 group of 5 scenario. You know, is there ways? I mean, the ACC still on my shit list right now for allowing like the Duke, whoever, you know, ACC title game, like fixing that up. So we're getting the right teams in there, but I'll be curious on what that will be.
Yeah, I agree. Got to get that cleaned up. I think the ACC is looking at that towards more of a, you know, final ranking system that kind of, when you got 5-team tiebreaker, transfer portal's going right now. I think you've got till the 16th of January to declare whether or not you're going to enter and whatnot. And it'd be interesting. The NCAA denied Trinidad Chambliss a 6-year waiver. I know that's probably going to go to the Supreme Court. It looks like there's whatever courts they're going to go to.
So he gets granted. He has no, they're using like an injury thing.
Like, yeah. They're using like a illness waiver or something. They were trying to use.
Happening.
Yeah. He didn't supply the sufficient evidence.
I think
I like to see him in the NFL anyways. I think he's a 3rd, 4th, 5th round draft pick right now anyway. So I'm
guys
excited
like
to see him there.
That have really good careers in like Division 3, 2, whatever, then have like another one, Division 1. They've done pretty well in the NFL. It's guys like him. I think maybe he has the best chance of having a big impact in that in the NFL if he goes pro.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think he's, you know, 3rd round, 4th round, 5th round, yep, wherever he projects to.
It's
he's
a good project.
Got good speed. He's got good arm. I mean, the only downside is he's 6'5", 11¾", whatever he is, right? I mean, we're kind of seeing smaller quarterbacks now struggle. Your prototypical quarterback is now 6'4" to 6'6". But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he gets that waiver, because if he does, he comes back to Ole Miss. If not, the other backup quarterback's already transferred to Missouri. So it'd be interesting to see who their quarterback is, since they don't really have one on the roster right now.
Ole Miss got somebody else already. I can't remember from who.
They might have, did they?
Yeah, they did. Here, let's look it up real
quick.
Yeah,
look it up.
It's Auburn's quarterback, Knight.
Oh, I don't even know who he is. They got to get somebody else.
He's a 5-star. He's a 4-star.
Yeah, he was third string, I think, on that team this year. There's a reason why Auburn won 4 games, Rome. Their number 1 or number 2 quarterback transferred to Florida State, so I'm not too hyped on that either. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dude. Crazy. All right. We'll see what happens in the transfer portal. I think Nebraska's making some moves as well. I haven't heard anything about UCLA.
Well, they don't even thank Aikman for giving him money, so they already lost that pocket, right?
That's policy. That's policy. Aikman,
guy gives you shout-outs every Monday night for football, and you can't even give him a thank you?
Just need a thank
you. That's rough, man.
That's crazy, dude.
That's rough, dude. I mean, you give UCLA more love than anything right here, Rome.
I do.
Texas spending money. Oklahoma spending a lot of money.
Dude, Texas is going to look good next year. I'm liking that one.
I think Texas, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't know if they hired a new defensive coordinator.
I don't know.
I don't know if they've hired a new guy yet or not.
I've been a little overwhelmed. Like, this whole thing's happening. You know, football's been crazy to end the year. Really good playoffs so far, though. Really good playoffs. All right.
We'll see what next year looks like, Rome.
Yeah. What else happened? I wanted to mention it quickly, but I can't remember now.
Well, if we're out of football, Rome, and Rome, at the top of the show, you said you wanted to talk football. We did that. Just want to make sure you got that out of the way.
I think we covered that almost 2 hours deep.
Okay, just want to make sure. I would say big motorsports news out there, Rome. I don't know if you heard about
this. Chase.
The Chase is back.
The Chase, yeah.
The Chase is back for NASCAR. Aaron, you familiar with the Chase?
Because everyone complained. All the fans complained. They finally got change happening. That's
it was great. Terrible. I'm pretty sure I went on like an hour rant while Aaron was off that one day at the end of the NASCAR season, just hosing Denny Hamlin for his championship. Yeah. So the Chase is back. I'll be honest. Still don't love the Chase, but it's significantly better than the elimination crap they've been doing for the last 14 years or whatever the heck, playoff system NASCAR's had. But the Chase is back. And I think that's a huge win for NASCAR.
They're already hyping Daytona coming up here in about a month.
As they shoot, the Super Bowl of motor racing, I think that's what they call it. But it's really the Indy 500. But anyways, yeah, Daytona hyping up there. But the Chase, if you just questions about what that is. You know, the Chase was 2004 to 2013. It was in place. It was the first introductory, quote-unquote, postseason for NASCAR. So it isn't just a point system that goes, throughout the season, like the rest of Formula One, IndyCar, other motorsports around the world. But the Chase basically reset and put a final 10, final 12, but then it was kind of like a 10 race, point
elimination
system. Well, no, the Chase was an elimination. Basically, it was like you reset them. And the final 10 races, it is going to be, I think, 16 drivers.
I actually didn't like the Chase when they reset it. I think that's when I stopped watching racing.
I don't like it either because it robbed Jeff Gordon of championships because Jeff Gordon was Mr. Consistency over the 30-plus races. So I still have bones.
So basically,
to think about
you
that.
Get points, and then at the end, the top guys get to compete for the final 10 races. But
as long as you make
over.
It in the top 10, you're in and starts all over. It's like a brand new season.
Starts
so
all
you
over.
You could be like a 10 seed, but you're really like a 1 seed and you get a chance to go again.
That's how it sounds. Usually okay. Won.
Potentially. Right. You get premium point sliding based
on
the regular season.
I mean, it gives me a chance to win. It sounds like my type of competition.
Could just get to the dance
and reset the field.
You get premium slotting. So if you're first overall, you got like a 25-point lead over second place, and that kind of descends from there. So if you top in the regular season, you start the Chase with, more points ahead, to reward you for the regular season. But the current format was like, okay, these are extra races, and if you don't finish, you're just eliminated out of the first round. And then it get down to that final four, and when you get to the last race, only four drivers could win. And like some luck things happen down to like it's a one game winner take all stuff, which they're trying to create some game seven crap. But overall, like motorsports, like that's not how it works. Like it pays off consistency in how you're finishing races. And I think at least the 10 game sample is a little bit more. Like I said, Rome, I don't love it because I still would like Formula One and the other like, hey, this is the whole season. We work towards it. You need to be good in every race. But I think this is at least is something that is, a little more to even on like how to decide who the champion is for NASCAR.
No, yeah, it's pretty exciting. I think it's great that everyone spoke up how they hated the way this last year ended. And yeah, dude, I was kind of surprised that they announced it today. That was awesome.
Well, it was a big deal at the end of the season. Like I've hated this for a long time. I was talking with my dad about it actually because, we were – as younger, we were big into NASCAR. Like, Jeff Gordon was really my era, and I think that's when I started teetering.
Was that your guy?
That was my guy, man.
I didn't like Jeff Gordon.
No, I mean, you hate him or love him, but he was the transition.
Tom Cruise face. I always wanted to punch. It's just that Tom Cruise face.
I mean, he was the transition of the era when you think of. Did you watch the Earnhardt documentary on Amazon?
No. Should
it's
I?
It's really good. It's really
on
good.
Amazon.
On Amazon. Yeah. Dale Earnhardt Jr. and his sister, I think, you know, executive producing and stuff. Four parts, really great documentary. But the Earnhardt to Gordon transition really is kind of that thing, because NASCAR forever was like that Southern sport. Like it is about the South. We run all these South like dirt tracks and where it is. Jeff Gordon comes in, and that was really when NASCAR really took its big step into another level of celebrity, where Gordon's this West Coast guy, and you know, they start racing all these different places around. It's got a more of a national appeal, bigger sponsors, like you said. But yeah, Gordon was my guy. But the chase at that time, really post 2001, after Gordon's last championship, like he never caught on in the chase. It was really the Jimmy Johnson era, his teammate, and actually Gordon co-owned his car a little bit, that won that. But it was a different time. But I think it's good that it's back. I think NASCAR, when I was talking to my dad, like really like hating the playoff and where it's at, it wasn't the kind of the NASCAR we were used to, because we missed some dominance, because there was just like some fluky champions. There was never like, you know, you kind of root for somebody against. You think of like Earnhardt, and he was like, everyone hated him until they loved him. Gordon, they hated him until they loved him. Like, I think the Jimmy Johnson era kind of started this, where like he was kind of a neutral party, and there really wasn't in it. And then Dale Earnhardt Jr. never got that big victory where like I think everybody wanted. Like, that was, if you're talking wrestling, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was the big baby face that they wanted to win the championship and just never got it.
Crazy. Nah, good stuff. That's all I got.
We're good to go.
2 hours in, I think we're good to go, Rome. Started at 8:40, if I remember. Got on my notes, and it's now 10:35.
Wow. You take notes now?
All up here, brother.
All right. I'll do it. A nice 2-hour Bill Simmons-esque pod. Love it.
Maybe we'll get on Netflix. You never know.
Number 16, kind of Limitless. If you know, you know.
Yeah. All right, we are done. Catch the Sorcerer on the Sofa on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are out.